FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. And as you know, middle class under tremendous pressure right now. Pretty much the old blue collar factory jobs that are just disappearing in droves. Other opportunities that used to be available to you as a member of the middle class just aren't there anymore. Jason K. Roberts, a noted realtor here from my great state of Florida, has got some thoughts on that. And Jason, you've pondered this issue quite a bit, and you've got some solutions for you out there. And it's great to have you back on, as always.
Well, thank you, sir. I appreciate you having me back on.
So, murder of the middle class, as one author has called it, it's a serious, serious problem, isn't it?
Well, I'll tell you what, and the problem with that is that everybody is waiting for the jobs to come back, and that doesn't happen overnight. We have been going through a cycle, and again, you know me, I'm all about charts, and there is a chart for everything, and the great thing about charts is it takes all the emotional garbage out of everything. And if you look at the middle class income from about 1950 through about 2000, the middle class income went up every single year with inflation, and that range was anywhere from about 31,000 up towards just shy of 100. That was what's considered to be middle class, and those jobs were basically like you call it, blue collar jobs, labor jobs that were in manufacturing facilities and management jobs over those laborers. Well, you know, in 1990, our factories started leaving, and they started, Mexico and India and China took a ton of our jobs. Well, you know, millions and millions of jobs are gone, and they are not coming back anytime soon. The only way they're coming back is if we change our policies a little bit so that we get folks, we give people the incentive to start investing again. And that's got to be some kind of capital gains tax or something that'll get those folks to start moving those factories back into the States where we want them to be. Because even though we can go to Walmart and buy really, really cheap crap, it doesn't affect our incomes. You know, we can pay $20 for a shirt if we're making $60,000 or $70,000 a year, but we can only pay $5 for a shirt if we're making $21,000 or $25,000 a year. So those jobs is we got to get those back. But the problem, if you're 40 years old, 45 years old, more than likely those jobs aren't coming back, and you know it's going to take years. You know, that's a 3-year cycle at the very earliest. You know, for someone to say, okay, we're going to leave, and they close up shop in one country, and they, you know, find a location, they open up shop, and it takes 2 to 3 years, and that's if somebody's making a decision right now. We still have people leaving our country. You know, and I don't want to be political about anything, but listen to some of the politicians are talking about. You know, they name companies every month that Nabisco's leaving and, you know, Lowe's is leaving. All these different people are going out of the country where the labor's cheaper. So those jobs, you know, as much as everybody wants to count on them, they're not coming back anytime soon. So you got to look outside of the box, you know, to figure out ways to make your build your income.
Yeah, of course. And really, like you say, to hope that things are going to go back the way they used to be just is pretty naive, and it ain't going to happen. I mean, we're in a different time right now. We're in a different economy, and your knowledge, your ability to adapt is really what's going to save you here.
That's right. You got to think. You got to think differently than we used to, and complaining and oh woe is me is not going to help anybody. You know. So one of the things that I've talked to a lot of really really smart guys that have money, and they're some of them have kept their factories here because there's a lot of challenges to moving over, out of the country. But they make it so difficult. We are taxed at every single turn that, it's a financial decision, man, to keep my business open. You know, I got to move it overseas because now I got all this insurance money that they make me pay. And if I don't pay it, I get fined. And there's our policies affect, you know, folks that take risk and invest in our country and invest in businesses. And our policies are just not real good right now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's they're really anti-entrepreneur and anti-hiring people. When you hire somebody in this day and age, Jason, and you know it, you open yourself up to all sorts of a plethora of potential liabilities from discrimination based on race, on sex, on disabilities, on you name it. It's crazy. So the last thing you want to do as an employer is really hire somebody until you absolutely have to do it.
That's exactly right. And 2015 was the first year in, you know, 30 or 40 years, I think they said, that more small businesses closed than opened. And, you know, they always said small business was the backbone of our economy. Well, now basically, you know, we work for big conglomerates, big S&P 500 corporations, and those incomes are their ceilings on those things, you know, and there's so many people that are looking for jobs. When you hit a certain, you know, income level, they start looking for somebody to do your job cheaper. You're not valuable like you would be if you start your own business. And that's one of the things that I've been talking a lot about lately is, you know, maybe we've got to become that society that starts taking risks again, you know, we start opening our own business. We start taking those risks that, you know, there's something better for us than it is, you know, stamping a clock every Monday through Friday. And unfortunately, that is risky, but that's, I think, the only way we're going to get our country back.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree with you. And you know, you can't even stamp a clock. It's a virtual clock at this point. You probably have a biometric identifier or you've got some type of transponder that triggers the sensor when you walk in the building and when you walk out. And like you say, when you're an employee, you're simply a cost to be controlled. So maybe it's time that you take control of your destiny and find an alternative.
Well, I think, you know, along those lines, again, speaking to the folks that are, you know, 40 and 50 and 55 years old, the statistics are not good. We just have not saved anywhere near enough money to retire on. There's, I want to say something like 50% of you know, the 40 to 55 year old age group have saved less than $10,000. Well, you don't have enough time to save a half a million or $750,000 to retire and actually really retire, you know, and I think you need more than that personally. Mm-hmm. You know, I think if you don't have $1 million, you're not going to be comfortable, you know, with the interest rates where they're at right now, it's tough to earn an income. So instead of maybe trying to figure out how to save more money, because it's almost impossible, maybe you ought to try to figure out how to increase your income. And so that's done by starting side businesses, doing, you know, figure out something you love to do and go figure out how to monetize it. My thing, as you know, is real estate, and there are not enough people do it. Another thing that I really am really preaching now is let's work on our kids. You know, let's get our kids in a position so that when they're 55 and 60, they have money. And to do that, we got to start teaching them, one, to start saving money at a very young age and treat it like it's, you know, it's a debt. You know, save $100 or $200 a month or whatever you make automatically in a savings account before you start spending the rest of it. But I would like to see grandmas and grandpas and moms and dads, you know, stick $5,000 in an account when that kid's born. Create a trust fund for that kid that he can't touch or she till she's 60 years old. And just say, you know what? Your job is to be debt-free by the time you're 60, and if you do that, you'll be a millionaire. And imagine, number one, what that'll do for our personal finances, but imagine what that'll do to our country.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. Savings, unfortunately, with 0% interest rates heading to potentially negative interest rates, everything is stacked against you as a saver. And in fact, you need to be a contrarian about the value and the power of savings, because I look back and one of my regrets, one of my few regrets in life is I could have started saving when I was 18 and really just never thought about it. Nobody ever taught me. They never mentioned it in school. And everything in society is geared, Jason, to get you to spend money and keep the economy going. Get that new car that you don't need, that flat screen TV, and don't worry about it because we'll finance it for you. And
yep.
That's not a responsible way of doing things here.
Well, that's why we're at right now. I mean, as a country, we're teeter-tottering on bankruptcy. Our dollar has been devalued to a point where people are going to stop using it. And so there's a consequence to all that. Now we've, for 15 years, man, we've been living on credit, and it's, our lives really haven't changed. What happens when that credit shuts off? And it's going to, and at that point, you're going to have to live on what you've created and you saved for yourself. And so that's why I'm kind of telling people right now, let's start right now. Start a second job or start a second business and figure out how to make an extra $500 or $1,000 a month so that when things go bad, you still have an income. You still have an ability to fend for yourself, so to speak, because that credit card machine is going to turn off. And when it does, it's going to make 2008 look like a circus. And I don't know when it's going to happen, but it is.
Yeah,
so you have to start planning for that stuff right now. I'd never understood. Everybody asked me, I don't own my own house. Why don't you own your own house, Jason? I have 17. I own 17. I don't need to own my own damn house, because I don't live in them long enough.
Yeah.
If you're going to live in the thing for 5 or 10 or 15 years, well, now you're talking about it becoming a forced savings vehicle. But if you're flipping houses like you flip cars, you're going to go broke.
That is true. And well, a car, and that's the other thing. We go back to Robert Kiyosaki. He talks about things that you perceive to be a savings account, but it's really consumption. And a home can just be another form of consumption. A car is the worst. It's not even an investment. It's just a sinkhole. It's guaranteed that unless you're buying classic cars, like muscle cars from the 60s, it's guaranteed that it's going to be worth less, far less than what you paid for it when you drive it out the door. And hey, one thing, all right, you want a nice car, fine, but understand the costs involved in purchasing that car or leasing it and what you're really getting for your money.
Yeah, I don't, the new car thing has been something. I've only purchased one new car my entire life, and that was because it got 0% interest. If you look at, if you study how much money you lose the day you drive that thing off the car lot, you're paying $8,000-$9,000 just in sales commission, just in cost for the privilege of driving that the rest of the year, and it's going to cost you another $500-$700 a month just to do that. So I never understood giving somebody your money like that. So for me, it was always like, I'm not going to spend $45,000 on a new car when I can buy one for $20,000 that's got 15,000 or 18,000 miles on it and it'll last me just as long.
Absolutely.
We just haven't been taught that stuff. We don't understand money the way we need to.
Oh, for sure. And yeah, getting back to the car thing. I stopped buying new cars. The only time I'd get a new one is if it's some new model that you just can't find that's a couple of 2-3 years old. Otherwise, you go to a site like Auto Trader, you find a
yep.
car that's got less than 20,000 miles on it, even less than 10,000. You can find 4-year-old cars that have less than 10,000 miles on them, Jason, and they're severely depreciated, sometimes 50% or more over their original list price. And that car, like you said, is going to last you. You're going to have a warranty on it. If you get it certified, it's going to have a 100,000 mile warranty, depending on the manufacturer, of course, and the dealer. And hey, you know what? Once you drive that car out of the lot, it's a used car anyway. So you're buying a used car, even when you're buying a new car.
Exactly right. You can't, it's not like you can take it back in a week and trade it back in. You just can't do it.
Yeah.
So I just wish we would, as much, if you think about it, it's kind of ironic because our kids are coming out of college just strapped with debt and they know nothing about saving money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that tells me the system is broken. And I've thought seriously about, am I going to send my kids to college? What I would call a traditional college. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure it's worth it.
Well,
if they had to pay for it on their own, does it make sense for them to go into that kind of debt to, are they going to be able to come out of that school and make make money.
Well, here's the way to help combat that. Community colleges, there's some really great ones out there. One thing that they never talk about with community colleges is that often the professors there are actually in the business world. They're not professional professors or academicians. They are people who are actually doing what they teach. So you get a lot more of a realistic education. Community colleges, heavily subsidized by the government, extremely inexpensive. So the other thing is, you go there, you can overload on credits. And if you're going to go to a state school in the same state, they often have to accept all of the credits you got at your community college. So if you got the equivalent of 2.5 years worth of credits at that school, then you only have to pay for 1.5 years in another subsidized institution. And if your child is pretty on the ball, you get them to load up on AP advanced placement courses, for which you also get college credit. So you can wind up with 3 years of college and 2 years of community college. And then you got 1 year at the state school, and many state schools are still, their tuition's less than $10,000 a year, and you can get that education. But always, I think, have a goal for that education. Don't just go because you think it's a good idea to do, or that you should, everyone else is doing it, and I'll just get a job. Hey, it'll work out fine. You need to have a strategy when you're going to college.
Yeah, absolutely. And unfortunately, as an 18-year-old kid, how many kids know what they want to do when they're 30 years old? We just don't, you know? I wanted to be Gordon Gekko when I was an 18-year-old kid, you know? You just don't know. So, but we have to make those decisions at such a young age that, unfortunately, they're just not paying off right now. And again, I think that all leads back to jobs, and everything leads back to jobs. You know, if you're making more money, you're willing to pay more for certain things. You have a nicer car, you have a nicer house, but right now we are just barely getting by. And we're going to have to take control of our own financial future, because the government's not going to do it. They're trying to, and they're going to bankrupt everybody.
Yeah, they seem to be very intent on doing that, Jason. I mean, it's alarming, the deterioration of the government's finances and the country's finances as a whole.
It is. We cannot pay $19 trillion back. We can't.
No.
So I don't know what's going to happen with that. But you know, obviously, at some point, the country's going to come calling and saying, we want our money back, and we're not going to be able to pay them. And that's why they have to keep interest rates so next to nothing. Because when interest rates jump 1%, it adds, like, you know, we're talking about trillions of dollars to our budget. And you know, look at it. If we got $19 trillion in debt, and you know, a 10% interest rate is almost $2 trillion a year. So every single percent that they raise that interest rate, you know, you're talking about $200 billion. You know, it's mind-blowing. There's no way we will ever pay it back.
I don't see how. And it seems to be part of the game plan somehow, that some type of strategic default by the country. But it's really hard for a country to ever come back when you've stiffed all of your creditors all over the world.
Well, you know, look at Rome and all of these, you know, gigantic countries that are now nothing. And it was because they devalued their monetary supply. It's not because they didn't have, you know, they were the best armies. But the problem is, armies are funded by money. And when you devalue your currency, it's hard to keep a big army going on. And if you've created a lot of enemies, they're going to come after you when that happens. And so I don't know where this thing's going to end, but I do know that it can't keep going the way it is.
Yeah, barbarians at the gate type of scenario. And yeah, it's very disconcerting, but perhaps the country's waking up and maybe there's some hope. The rejection of the political orthodoxy, the establishment, the elite, whatever you want to call it, seems to be the theme of the current election, without getting into all the political ramifications.
And that might be the beginning of what needs to happen, you know, just electing somebody that's not part of that system that, you know, we've got to get back to a place where small business creates jobs and small business turn into medium-sized businesses who are sometimes purchased by big business. But right now, there are far too many people working for large corporations and your incomes are dictated by them. You know, very, very few people are making 150 grand in these big corporations. It just doesn't work. That those incomes were really for small businesses, and we don't have them anymore.
Yeah. So it seems it's very alarming when you see corporate formations, new business formations dipping under number of companies that shutter their doors. You got to wonder. So, Jason, people want to find out more about you, connect with you. Where's the best place to find you?
Best place is go to my personal website, jasonkroberts.com. And from there, you can link on to all our, you know, different businesses and the things that we do. You know, get a little bit of idea of, you know, where we're putting our money, I guess.
All right. And as always, you will find a link to Jason's site on our site, financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Take a look at it. We deal with these topics daily. It seems to be a never-ending area of interest that so many of you are very concerned about, rightly so. And Jason, we will talk to you again soon. Thanks so much for being on.
Thank you, sir, for having me.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.